Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Green Room Golf Course podcast. This week we're taking a look at one of the largest redevelopments of a golf course taking place anywhere in the country. The members at Whittington Heath could have been upset when it was announced that the HS2 railway would run directly through the centre of their golf course and through the centre of their Victorian clubhouse. Instead, they embraced the opportunity presented by the redevelopment and enlisted course architect Jonathan Gaunt to set about designing their new course. John Greasley was brought in as constructors, and Rainbird are installing the irrigation. The club also hired Mark Fry, the former deputy head greenkeeper at Worplesdon in Surrey. Mark is tasked with maintaining the existing course during the disruption and growing in the new holes that have been constructed. He succeeded long-standing Whittington Heath greenkeeper Trevor Morris in June 2019, and they were very big shoes to fill. I stopped by for a conversation with Jonathan and Mark to find out more about what's taking place. I hope you enjoy the show. So I'm here at Whittington Heath, having a look at the redeveloped course and the new holes that are being built. I'm here with Jonathan Gaunt, course architect, and
hello.
How are you doing? And Mark Fry,
yep.
Who is course manager, and you've been here for
just over 3 months now.
Wow, 3 months, first flush, honeymoon period.
Certainly in the honeymoon period, yeah.
Brilliant. Jonathan, you've been involved with the club the longest. Could you just give me a real quick overview of what's happening here?
Yeah. Well, I first got involved here in 2012. The project was to accommodate the HS2 railway line between London and Birmingham. This is the section that goes through to meet the west coast main line, and the route of the railway line was going right the way through the middle of the golf course, clubhouse, greenkeepers compound, affecting indirectly three holes and directly six holes. So our job was to design nine new holes for the golf course and also practice facilities. We went through the process of master planning, and then we got planning permission for the project back in 2016-17.
Yeah.
The project is being funded by HS2, and the intention is to provide like-for-like facilities, which means like-for-like clubhouse, greenkeepers compound and golf course. So we still have 18 holes here. Got five new holes on new land adjacent to the existing golf course, on what was farmland. And it's beautiful sandy soil, very free draining. But incorporated into that land is also 10 hectares, 25 acres of mitigation land, heathland. And that has become basically the landscape within which the golf holes will fit.
Yeah.
We've already started work on site. Actually, we're three quarters of the way through it. The contractor, Greasley's, started in January 2019, and we will complete main works in November, December this year. And that will just leave one green to build, the eighth green next spring, and then the 17th fairway next autumn, 2020. The plan is to open the new holes for play fully in spring 2022.
Wow. So
in a nutshell.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Whittington Heath isn't a new club. It's been here 100 years, I believe, quite a long time.
Yeah.
And obviously the old cliche is that every golf club member is also a golf club architect. When you're coming into a course like this and a club like this, and they say, we've got to design these new holes, where do you start? Are you giving carte blanche, or do you have to listen to all those different opinions and build your design around that? Where do you start?
They were really good here, because they allowed us the opportunity to come up with a number of options, design options, which did really let us start from scratch, certainly on the new land. However, because, like you say, you know, every golf club is full of golf course architects, they all had a comment to make. So we made presentations to the committee and then to the membership with a number of options, and we ended up fine-tuning the design to a point at which we got general agreement. You know, you always get some people who disagree with certain aspects, but we generally came to an agreement after a number of options and iterations, whereby I'd like to think that 98.5% of it was our design, and then the other bit was those guys actually providing some very sensible and useful comment and advice and feedback that relates to them playing this golf course every day of their lives. Some of those guys are playing 150, 200 times a year, so they know this golf course better than us. And also the greenkeeping team. Head greenkeeper back then had a fair amount of input. The golf professional here, Mike Raj, has been really instrumental in supporting the move back towards the Harry Cole design strategy and style. Very well read. There's a number of committee members as well who are very well read when it comes to golf course architecture, and they've been really supportive of getting that Harry Cole style back into this golf course. Harry Cole, of course, being potentially the most famous golf course architect, British golf course architect, and designer of top golf courses in the world.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of movement back to those golden age architects. A lot of tree removal to open them up, a lot of bunker reshaping. Why, as an architect, why do you think people are harking back to that time more than they were?
I think they've kind of realised that it's probably less intensive to maintain. You know, okay. I think when it comes down to it, aesthetically, those old photographs, those old black and white photographs, it's a bit of a romantic thing, but there was definitely a move in the US when people like Coren Crenshaw started doing these kind of really rough-edged golf courses, where there's been a move against that kind of formulaic design, that kind of really Americanized design, and back to something that is much more natural and much more kind of British in style. And I think that has slowly but surely snowballed over the years. And, you know, I'm working alongside other really good architects, you know, contemporaries, who have been doing similar kind of thing as well. You know, bringing back the original styling and shaping that you would have seen in the 1920s and 1930s. And it works on these golf courses, especially here at Whittington Heath, because it's a traditional Heathland golf course.
Yeah.
And it fits.
How do you... Technology's changed. Golf balls are flying further. Clubs are very different. Yeah. How do you modernise a Harry Cole design? Is that a simple question? Is that a difficult question?
Because you know you've got a certain amount of, let's say, reluctance from the membership to start going, changing things on a large scale basis. But there's nothing you can do about it. Technology has moved on significantly, not just in the last 25 years, but in the last 5 years. You know, the way that people are hitting golf balls nowadays means that a lot of those original bunkers are redundant. However, a lot of the greenside and approach bunkers are still very much in play. So you could argue that a lot of the greenside and approach bunkers with a remodeling of them are still very relevant. So actually, we've not taken out a lot of greenside and approach bunkers, but fairway bunkers, we've certainly moved to a more influential location down the fairway. Yeah, you know, so it might be another 20 metres, 30 metres, 40 metres down the fairway, and that's starting to influence those guys who are hitting, you know, 250 metre drives, 260 metre drives.
When you're designing a course, do you start with the 280? Do you start thinking of the par golfer? Is that how you design it? Or is it, do you start 10 handicap, 20 handicap? Where does your design start?
Admittedly, it's always based on the back tee mark.
Right, always. Back tee mark.
Yeah,
right.
So, you know, our landing point on the fairway is measured at 240 metres, about 260 something yards. You know, so if that is the point at which a ball is going to come to land, then you're relating your bunker positions to that. However, that's your back tee. And that's going to be played on a number of occasions by a number of people. When it comes to forward tees, you know, so you're moving forward through the tees, then you're making sure that each one of those tee boxes, tee platforms, relates to that bunker position or that hazard position or where that rough comes into play, etc. So as long as you're taking into account the best golfer, admittedly, I'm not taking into account professional golfers here at Whittington Heath, because it's funny actually, because one of the pros here, Jordan, is one of the top long driving golfers in the world. I think he was number three recently. You know, he's hitting the ball 400 yards without even thinking about it, but I am not designing for him. I am definitely not. And he's happy with that, yeah. Right? Because he's one member of the club, let's say. But, you know, those people who are in the ball, you know, let's say in yards, 275, 280, 290 yards down the fairway, I'm taking those guys into account, certainly from the back tees. Yeah. But then the forward tee positions take into account those guys who don't hit it quite as far.
Yeah. Found it really interesting.
Yeah. Gone forever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. You're gonna have trains flying through here. Basically, where we're sat in the clubhouse is going to be the road.
Where we sit right now.
Where we're sat, there's going to be trains flying down, you say, at 250 miles an hour.
Yeah. Actually, just double check with HS2, they will go at that speed.
Yeah, they might be slowing down, you know. Is there anything you can do to mitigate the noise and the
well, calamity? The interesting thing is that the railway line, as where we're sitting now, is going to be 7 metres below ground level in cutting.
Right.
And when it's in cutting, it's not as much of a problem, but when it comes out of cutting,
we've got a whole load of tree line, you know, that will be a noise about to, you know, to
we'll do it.
But are they putting any?
I think they're also putting some acoustic fencing up both sides of the railway line as well. So not only is it restricting the noise, but it's also shielding the visual aspect as well.
Right. Okay.
So you won't see the trains going by.
I mean, it's having a, you know, a railway through your course is nothing new. It's some of the most iconic golf courses in the world. I've got
a
railway down the side of 250 miles an hour strikes me. It's going to be loud and dramatic.
It is. It's going to be like an aeroplane taking off, most likely. But I mean, I don't know what it's going to be like. I've been on the bullet train in Beijing, and that was unbelievable. But I have no idea what it's going to sound like here.
I think it will become norm. It will be, you know, something to get used to. But after a while, you know, like my golf course got a train running around the side of the golf course. They just ignore it now. You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's true.
So it will just be the same effect over here. You know, just that when we won't see it, it will go too fast.
Yeah,
it's gone. Exactly. It'll be gone before you. Yeah, you'll hear it, but you won't see it.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I'll bring you in, Mark, if that's okay. You've only been here now. You told me three.
It's my fourth month, I think.
Maybe
just over 4 months, actually. Yeah.
So, where were you at before this?
I was at Wolverton Golf Club before, and I was there for 8 years.
As a course manager?
No, as a deputy head greenkeeper there. So
this is your first course manager?
This is my first course manager. I was a head greenkeeper at Dulwich in Sydney before, but this is my first course manager role, yes.
Okay. It's a big project to come into.
Yes, it is, yeah.
You couldn't. You didn't want to take anything easy on. What?
This is one of the things that drive me up here. You know, originally I'm from Devon, and then I moved up to Surrey, and I always wanted to become a course manager, and I always wanted to make an impact. To you know, of what I do in my job, and when I was told about this by Bruce Jameson, I came up here and I could see the massive potential, and I was really excited, and it really made me very keen to, you know, apply for the position. And the more time I keep coming up here, the more time I wanted to make sure I get the job. So the biggest thing for me is the new course that's been developed, and the mitigation land to try and recreate their heathland. And you know, with my experience at Wolverton, I thought you know, this could be a really good to shine my name, you know.
Yeah.
If we're talking like 5 to 7 year time, that heathland will be established and it will look amazing, and to have my name put towards that would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Make a name for yourself.
Yeah. It's not just a new course. The old course, there's a lot of work to be done too. You know, to 40, 50 years ago, it was a really proper heathland course, and the trees are self-developed and taking away the heathland, and the committee and the members, they want to turn it back into a heathland course. And again, you know, it's inspired me to try and turn it back into a heathland, and also, you know, make me look really good. So yeah. I'm really excited to, I've given myself like 5 to 7 years to turn it back into a heathland, and once I do, you know, I'm going to be very proud, and hopefully so are the members.
Yeah. You've come into this role after you've taken over from Trevor Morris, is that right? Who was here 50 years?
52 years, yeah.
52 years. I mean, that's a big change for any club, isn't it?
Yeah.
How have you been welcomed, and have you changed practices, or is there too much else going on that you haven't had a chance to do?
You know, Trevor Morris has been here for 52 years, a very loyal member of staff and very well respected, and it's a big tree to fill in, you know. You know, for me, it just to continue what he's doing and try and turn it back into a heathland, you know. But, you know, since I've been here for a spell of 4 months, a lot of members are very, you know, happy what I've done so far. The, you know, to continue what Trevor's done, keep the presentation of the course at a higher level. I think I'm on the right track for doing so, and I'm excited to, don't know if I'll do 50 years, because I think I'll be 6 foot under by then, but yeah, but it's a long term plan, and hopefully I can continue the good effort.
It was a tough start though, because, you know, Mark came in halfway through the golf course being remodeled.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of disruption to play to the membership, and then he was plonked here, and you know, it's tough.
It was a tough decision to get my head around what was going on, you know.
Yeah. Do you two have a lot of conversation, because at the end of the day you're going to have to look after it?
Yes.
After the holes, do you have a lot of conversations and back and forth?
Oh god, yeah.
Weekly. Continuously weekly. Even if Jonathan's not here, he's elsewhere, we pick the phone up and we communicate on a regular basis.
And that goes for, you know, where we go from here, you know, because you've got a contractor out there building a golf course to a design, but then I've got an idea in my head as to how I want it presented. I'm reasonably open-minded in that I'm not looking for championship tournament conditions out there. I'm looking for high quality private members golf club conditions. That's what I'm looking for, and it just so happens he's from Warbleston, you know, so he knows exactly how to produce that. And with Bruce Jameson in the background as well, who's been providing support here for 10 years, I think, something like that, he's a great team, works through that. I know that he's going to do exactly what I would expect, and probably more than I would expect, based on his experience.
Brilliant. It's a good recommendation for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
To hear these people saying that.
I'm pleased the way I've started and the way it's going, because a lot of the members are very pleased with the golf course, and, you know, we had a difficult summer last year, like many golf courses did, with the with the extreme heat, and you know, and the golfers out there, we got hit as well, and we're still recovering now. But you know, that was another difficult tar for me to try and get the standard out after losing a lot of the grass on the fairways and tees, yeah. and surround, and you know, that was my job to try and get all that back. And we're going into winter now with a much better coverage, and I'm looking forward to next spring where I can continue doing some more elevation work on the fairway, on the bare areas, and to, you know, get the grass back, grass coverage back.
Is this the first growing of new holes that you've ever done?
For on the scale that it is, yes. Like Jonathan said, 9 holes roughly. I've just done like 1 new green, nursery green, a couple of tees, a couple of bunkers.
Little things,
but on the scale of this is a much bigger one I've ever done.
So in terms of how, when it's handed over to you, how to grow in the new holes, where are you looking for training or education or how to do it, or is it just good greenkeeping and it'll get there?
It's just applying the correct fertilizer and making sure the correct water.
There's no secret, it's just good greenkeeping.
Yeah, well, it's just because I grow in a nursery green before at Warburton, the new putting green now, and I've got my experience from, you know, making sure you put the right fertilizer, keeping it topped up regularly, because when in the new green, the fertilizer tend to leak through, and just got to keep making sure, you know, you do a lot by the eye, by the experience you've had, and yeah, so you know, watching the green grow in here, I'm making sure, elating with Bruce James, and also making sure that I'm applying the correct amount of fertilizer.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. You're going to have your maintenance sheds are going to move, and you're going to have new sheds. Have you had any say on what they're going to look like?
Yes, they did an original plan, and Tony Rundle, who's the project leader on this, he let me have a look at the plan when I first came, when I arrived, and he asked me to have my input in it. I made a few modifications, you know, to how, with all the different golf courses I've worked in the background, I just moved a few things around on the plan, and I've gone off the planning again to my specification that I think will work better for me and the greenkeeping team, and we'll just wait for that to come back. But speaking to the architect, he thinks it's a good idea, doesn't seem to be any problems of the change.
And yeah.
With some of the changes I've done, I'm hoping I'll save the club a little bit of money too, and we can utilise that elsewhere.
In other words, what's important to you in a maintenance? What's important to you in the greenkeeping facility? What's the most important thing?
Making sure that we've got the space, using the footing to the best ability, productive, you know, maximise the whole space of the shed.
Mm.
Just, I think that's very important, yeah.
I was just wondering, as an aside, I was down at Halliford, looking at their new sheds, and probably the most interesting thing I saw there was that they had a ping pong table. And in today's age of lunch breaks and looking at your phone, the idea of just having a ping pong table where they could have a little tournament to build bonds, I just thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, nice idea, I like that. Yeah.
I wonder if you had any ideas like that. Space and efficiency is good.
So you got room for a ping pong table.
I don't think, you know, we will have, you know, I think I'd rather use that as a storage space rather than a ping pong.
maybe their shed was that a little bit big.
Yeah, a bit too big, wasn't it? Yeah.
I don't think our shed would be big enough or anything like that, you know.
It's fair enough. One of the most interesting things, and you both touched upon it, you're doing the construction of new holes, but you're also doing a lot of mitigation.
Yeah.
In terms of you're installing a huge amount of heathland. How big is that exactly?
10 hectares.
10 hectares of heathland.
Yeah.
And Bruce was telling me downstairs that he thinks this is the first time ever that farmland has been transformed into heathland. Would you agree?
It's a good question. I don't have the answer to that, to be honest, but I mean, we're working with a team of ecologists Matt John's associates, who have been advising throughout the length of this project. They have worked on a number of heathland recreation projects. Whether or not they've worked on farmland before, I think they worked on forestry down in Dorset or somewhere like that. But they said this is the biggest project that they've worked on personally. So it'd be worthwhile finding out.
Yeah.
Can't tell you for sure.
A normal farmland is very hard to fertile soil. And normally you won't get heather growing in a very high fertile soil.
Right.
When they strip the top,
they take the top between 20 centimetres and 40 centimetres of topsoil off. They scrape that away, and then the soil beneath, the subsoil beneath, which is predominantly sand, becomes the soil that you will sow your heathland seed into.
Right.
However, that's been tested and it's actually, the pH is too high. It's about 6.4 or 6.5 pH. And we need to bring it down to about 4.5 pH.
To so, 5, yeah.
Because that's what heather
likes, acid soils. So we are using sulfur in granules. Granular sulfur to bring the pH down. And then within the heathland mix, which will be hydro seeded, there will be an acidifier within that called Aquafix, I think it's called.
I think so, yeah.
And that material will keep the pH down and hopefully retain it as somewhere around 4.5 to 5.
Is that something that you need to keep applying, or does the heather help itself?
You have to keep applying the sulfur.
Uh-huh.
Whether or not you need to keep applying the Aquafix, I'm not sure about that. Yeah, but there are three applications of sulfur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, interesting. Yeah. And obviously, heather's a valuable habitat, so it's great to have that. Mm-hmm. I think that's the HS2 bringing that in, aren't they?
It's mitigation for other heathland lost along the line.
Fair enough.
And that, we've got a specific measurement. It's, I said 10 hectares, it's actually 10.2 hectares of 27 hectare field, basically.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, and when you've constructed a new holes, this might be a question for either of you, I'm not sure. When you've constructed new holes, how do you age them so they look like Harry Colt holes and not like a new build estate? How do you bed them in quickly?
I was going to look at Mark and say it's down to maintenance. However, the kind of seed mixes, that's the key to it, basically. So we're not using, brightly coloured ryegrass out there. We're using a bent fescue mix throughout the majority of the playing areas on the golf course.
Which we have predominantly on our course as well. So,
right.
So it will be matching the new course. So,
And then in the roughs, we're actually using pure fescue. And those kind of grasses are traditionally found on heathland golf courses. But it's all very well seeding those grasses down. It then comes down to the maintenance of those. So basically, I know that Mark won't overwater them, and he won't over-fertilise them. So he'll keep them pretty lean, I know.
I would treat the new hole exactly the wanted establishment and we're ready to plow now. I would treat them exactly the same as I'm treating the existing core. So, hopefully everything then will be very similar.
Okay, yeah. And one of the things you're doing is coring the greens.
Yeah.
That's one of the questions downstairs was one of the guys who was coming wanted to learn a bit more about that. Is that a relatively new practice?
I don't think it's relatively new. It is to me. I've not done it on a golf course before.
Yeah.
I did it in America. I went to America for 2 years and we called a green to build another nursery green.
Yeah.
And we used the same methods of what we're doing here. Called a green, top dress, press, seed, press, and then water feed until we get establishment. So it's not a new technique, but I think it is a rare technique that they use here in England.
Mm.
In America, they do it quite often.
But in actual fact, it makes so much sense because you're using cores from the existing golf course and they are being incorporated into the new greens.
Admittedly, the profile of the new greens is based on a USGA style specification. So you could argue that the new greens are more free draining. They will be. They will respond slightly differently until a number of years down the line when they kind of marry in better with the existing. But by using the existing cores, you are bringing the same grass species into the new greens. But then we're overseeding with the bent grass on the new greens, so I would say the sward is going to be purer. And over time, you'll get a much more kind of variable mix. The annual meadow grass will come in. There's a bit of fescue in there as well. It will match. They will match.
The golf course, it 50-50 bent grass power mix, and that's what we're incorporating with the new course. Yes, Jonathan said they put fresh bent grass in, so we will have more bent over there. But the existing course, we're overseeding on a regular basis 3-4 times a year to try and increase the bent on the existing course as well. So hopefully, over the years of time, both courses will be very similar character.
Yeah. And just to finish off, Matt, you're excited for the years ahead? Are you looking forward to the challenge?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. One of the reasons why I came up here is because of the challenge, you know. Mm-hmm. If I've become successful at growing in a great new golf course and creating the Heathland back on the existing course, you know, then I've done my job and I'll feel proud, you know. So it's a great challenge and it's something I'm looking forward to seeing the end result of. And I think, like I said, 5 to 7 years time, when the existing course looking like the new course, or the new course looking like the existing course, you know, I'm going to look back and I'll be proud of, you know, I'll be 55 years old then. And so,
I can't believe that.
Come back and play the golf course. Yeah. You'll have to do that. Yeah.
You will keep us updated on how it goes.
Yeah. I'll be 55. I think I'm going to be 50, just over 50, actually. Right. Put my mouth on.
I'll be a lot more than 55.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks, guys. Jonathan, if anybody would like to get in contact to ask you any questions about anything, do you have social media, Twitter, anything, way for people?
Instagram.
Yeah. What's your handle? Twitter handle.
Jonathan Gorn.
At Jonathan Gorn. Yeah. And Mark, if there's anything anybody would like to ask you about the plan, how can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, just Twitter and Facebook. My Twitter account is Mark527.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments, and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.